When the pandemic hit, Nerd Night Orlando founder Ricardo Williams took a break from organising in-person events. Since then, he's found other ways to channel his celebration of nerdiness and learning new things. And this month, he's focused on the intersection of Black history and nerd culture.
Well, Ricardo, thanks again for joining me.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for having me, Matthew.
Now, you've been posting historical vignettes, I guess you could call them, on your social media streams this month, highlighting Black History Month. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about what you've been focusing on and also talk to me about nerdier things. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so, you know, I've hosted Nerd Night for going on 9 years next month. And, you know, I've always had this idea in the back of my mind where I would just kind of, you know, do some type of format where I could have like a short platform for like little known facts. And when the pandemic hit, it was like, well, I have a bit more time. So I just started kind of making these little short videos. And they were primarily for Instagram just because, you know, the reels were kind of a new thing at the time and, you know, TikTok and that whole kind of format. You know, obviously we use them on all platforms, but really it's just like a way to kind of show that there's an intersection, no pun intended, you know, for your show, but between, you know, culture and history and movies and these kinds of things. And of course, with Black History Month, which is something that's very dear to me, I wanted to be able to use that same kind of platform to like tell stories and little facts that people don't normally know about. And I used to think that it would be like silly to do that because I'm like, well, people must know these things. Like I know them. A lot of my friends know them, but then I'll start talking to new friends or other places and people are just like, oh, I didn't know that, you know? And I'm just like, oh yeah, we got to do this. You know, we got to do more of these kind of things.
And just as an example, one you posted late last week, while a student at Antioch College, creator Scott King worked as a babysitter for the Lithgow family.
Yeah.
Babysitting the later prominent actor John Lithgow. So, I mean, you sort of take pains to seek out these little kind of gems, I suppose you could call them, things that people might not necessarily know, because people know the names, right? And they're probably paying a little more attention to it around Black History Month, but you've sort of made it a quest to find out stuff that people didn't realize before, maybe.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd like to take full credit for it, but this has to go to my parents. They were very much like the kind of people that wanted you to kind of go past the more binary kind of like fixtures of things and like look into the nuances. And my father particularly was always like very much a discussion type of person. He always wanted to have more discussions about things and ask more questions. And my mother, this specific thing is kind of where I got the idea from. There used to be this little segment on the Tom Joyner Morning Show called Little Known Black History Fact. And my mom would make me listen to it every morning before school, I think from like maybe seventh grade all the way up until like ninth or 10th. So I had to listen to it every day at like 7:30 in the morning. So, you know, no matter what, I had to get up early, you know? So, and that's kind of where this kind of came from in terms of the Black history component. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely been on this mission because I just know so many random facts. I don't know, between like hosting Nerd Night, you know, and reading a bunch of books as a kid and listening to little known Black history fact and just having a lot of interesting friends who just like say things in front of me. And I just jot it down in my memory and I'm just like, well, I got to share this stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. So as nerdier things, is it, it's primarily Instagram, you said, but is it on some other platforms too?
Yeah. I mean, Instagram's probably my personal favorite. So I, you know, I've just kind of focused on that in terms of like that, those kind of like short videos and reels and stuff. And I just like the format of Instagram. I mean, I'm a, you know, a video person by trade. You know, I've been studying video production since I was in middle school, you know, I love that, the idea that it focuses on the image, you know. But of course we're on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. Ironically, YouTube is probably like the smallest platform we have. I just don't spend enough effort on it. I don't know. I'm just like, I'm very focused on certain things. But yeah, we're on all the main platforms. The only one we're not on, and this might date me with my age, is TikTok. We're not on TikTok, but maybe we should be. I don't know. Everybody seems to be doing really well on TikTok. I don't know.
Were you into Vine before that closed down? Because that was like the precursor to TikTok.
That one was slightly too short for me. I wasn't on Vine. I did enjoy being sent Vines from my friends and laughing for about 6 seconds. I think that was the length of what it was. But 6 seconds might be a little too quick for what the stuff that I'm doing. Because, I mean, there are times where, like, you know, I'll write a quick little script for, you know, a video or something. And I'm like, it'll be like 42 seconds. I'm like, oh, what do I have to cut out, you know, to squeeze it into 30 seconds or something, you know? And because that 30 seconds is really the format for like the Black History Facts, things like that. And there's a few videos that I've recorded that are a long form that are 2-3 minutes. We haven't uploaded them yet, but it just kind of digs into more things that you honestly just can't cut out. You have to keep some of that stuff in there. And but yeah, Vine is was a little too short for my taste.
So, in kind of putting forth some of these little known facts and focusing on Black History Month and some of the leading lights, people that we'd be talking about normally, but just trying to take a different angle on it. Like, are you getting some feedback from your audience? Like, are people saying, oh, I didn't know about that? Or are you kind of converting some people to the arcane pieces of knowledge?
I can tell you the funny thing is it's always the funny little facts. Like you brought up the one about Coretta Scott King when she was in college babysitting for the Lithgow family, which one of the baby kids she babysitted was John Lithgow, who in the future became a famous actor. It's things like that that make people kind of chuckle and laugh. It's just like, wow, it makes the world feel so much smaller. You know, like this person knows that person. And that's actually a fact that I didn't know until just recently. And the video is really more so about how we have this image of Coretta Scott King being Martin Luther King's wife. And we just kind of see her through that lens. But the reality is, you know, like most people, she was a full-formed character. And she had a huge contribution to the civil rights movement. And I wanted to use that quick little video to highlight that, by the way, you know, she was a trained singer and very good at it. And which one of her roles in the civil rights movement was organizing concerts, which can be great fundraisers for movements, and performing at those concerts. And, you know, when Time magazine, of course, highlighted MLK, they had a little blurb about her being this talented young soprano. And, you know, these things like that are important, you know. And it also brings up another important aspect of the civil rights movement, of a lot of, you know, women who had to kind of take a back seat to the role of the men in the movement. And maybe that was, you know, what they wanted to do. Maybe that's what they had to do. But either way, the truth of their role in that is usually gets, you know, swept away. And we don't really see that. And to their credit, I mean, you know, if they chose to do that, it's a really bold and kind of courageous thing to kind of allow someone else to take the lead. But at the same time, we should never forget the importance that they've contributed to, you know, history. So
when you think about Black History Month as a whole, like, do you feel like society's attitude to it has changed much? Like, since you were coming up through elementary school and middle school, like, have the way people think about Black History Month and about some of these prominent figures, has that changed a lot?
You know, that's hard to say. I can say that, you know, when one thing, there's a certain level of balance that comes with it. Like, okay, so let me take it back. One of the reasons why I like the idea of intersecting the culture, history, and movies, and then putting that through the lens of Black history, is that, like, nerds and Black history are both kind of like existing on the fringes of society, right? And, you know, for me, that's like an obvious, like, thing to bring together, you know? And ironically, both nerds and being Black are both kind of mainstream now, and yet there still is quite a bit of pushback. And for me, it's like, okay, well, everything that I've always done in my adult life is about learning, reminding folks that learning is fun, and people need to know these things. And I feel like, you know, if I can do it in a fun way and kind of show that, you know, nerd culture existing on the fringes of society and, you know, being Black, which, you know, for generations of oppression has existed in a similar kind of fringe, you know, that they can work together and, like, we can learn things and through that lens. But, you know, it's hard to say if things are changing, because I also look at through the lens of, like, through a political lens. And when one thing gets, you know, very strong, then the opposition will push back, you know, like, it's a tough question to answer, to be honest, but I don't know. I'd like to think that things are better in some cases, but I don't see the existence of, like, I remember in 2008 when I was, you know, volunteering on the Obama campaign, and I remember so much of the discussion was like, okay, well, you know, we have a Black president now, like, this is the beginning of the end for racism. And it's like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like just one famous Black person is going to, you know, move the needle on the way a whole society of people feel. It can influence it. It can be a great component to visibility. But I don't know if that is the end all be all, you know, for, you know, the people on the other side.
I'm interested too in your comments about this kind of intersection of nerd culture and Black culture. I mean, are there a lot of role models for Black nerds, like in popular culture, for example? It seems to me like that sort of genre may be fairly young still.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, there are for me personally. I mean, I don't want to speak for, you know, the entirety of the diaspora, but for me, I mean, I always saw MLK as a nerd. You know, I did a short video about the story about how Nichelle Nichols was going to quit the first season of Star Trek because she wanted to go back to doing musical theater. And Gene Roddenberry, who the creator of Star Trek, really did not want her to do that. He was like, don't you see what I'm trying to build here? Like, this is a really special thing. And she had went to this fundraiser where she was going to, you know, be a, you know, famous person helping the fundraiser. And she ran into MLK, and he was gushing over her about what a huge fan he was and how, you know, his kids, you know, obviously, you know, you don't let your kids stay up late at night, but he was like, Star Trek came on late. And he said, this is the only show that I will let my kids stay up and watch, because for the first time we are seen on television the way we're supposed to be seen. You know, she played a role that was important to the story. She had autonomy. She had a position of authority and leadership. And, you know, that just didn't happen before that. And the thing is, that's a little known story amongst most people. But for me, I knew that story as a kid. I heard that story when I was like 12 or 13. So in my eyes, oh, MLK is not just an ally in the civil rights movement. He's a nerd. He was staying up late with his kids watching Star Trek, which is what I did with my mom, was stay up late and watch Star Trek, because she's a huge Trekkie, of course. And so for me, it was like, oh yeah, my heroes were also nerds. You know, like MLK is the absolute nerd. You know, he was digging into history and culture and policy and talking about things that people didn't want to talk about. And he was also a Trekkie. So that was cool.
Mm-hmm. When was the first episode of Star Trek?
1966, I believe. Yeah, 66. Wow. And you know, it's funny. I've noticed a lot of leaders in the last couple of years, whenever MLK comes around, they always make an effort to post colored pictures of him. So I try to do that as well, because we always kind of see him as existing in this like black and white era that's so far removed. And if he were alive today, he would have been younger than Betty White. You know, like he would have been, you know, God willing, he would still be alive had he not been killed. You know, so it's, you know, that whole era is kind of more recent than we think it of. And even Star Trek, is the origins of that are more recent than we'd realize. I mean, Nichelle Nichols is still alive, and she's still, I think she just did her last convention just recently, maybe last month. Mm-hmm. So
back to Nerd Night and what you've been doing. And has it been kind of freeing to be, for the last couple of years? I mean, there's obviously not been able to have the event in person, you know, during the height of the pandemic. Must be frustrating, but then you've found some other outlets for the kind of stuff that's going on in your head.
Oh God, I got to tell you, it is absolutely freeing. and let me clarify. I love Nerd Night so much. If I wasn't hosting it, if I wasn't organizing it, if I wasn't doing these events and Comic Cons and stuff, I would be first in line, front row at whatever event I could be at. But it's a lot of work, you know, and I've been doing it, you know, for almost 9 years now, and I do a lot of other things. So it can be challenging to finish other things or to, you know, do your other work when you have something that's so demanding. And it's not just demanding in a work sense, it's demanding in a social sense, in a personal sense. You know, like the one thing that people always want to talk to me about is Nerd Night. You know, whether I'm like, you know, buying a pub sub and I'm in line at Publix and it's like, hey, when's Nerd Night coming back? And it's like, you know, I don't know, you know, could you pull your mask up a little bit? You know, and when we're able to take those off, then maybe, I don't know. But at the same time, you know, I was definitely feeling very overwhelmed around that period going into 2020. Like, this is, you know, I need a break, you know? And so COVID happened and it was like, well, I kind of got what I wanted. I got a bit of a break. And I thought that maybe over time, you know, we can kind of split the difference. I could take a break and go back to doing it and feel refreshed. But then this thing just keeps dragging on. And we did a few events. We did a really great event with the Museum of Art, which is a huge hit. We had over 600 people in attendance, but it wasn't quite Nerd Night. You know, it wasn't quite presentations on stage with an audience. It was like, okay, we're collaborating and we're taking the culture of what we do and using it and showing it through art. And we did one or two events back at Stardust, you know, those small intimate ones. And, but, you know, Omicron Delta has made it very challenging. And, you know, I try to stay on top of the news in terms of COVID and not to like scare myself, but just to be, you know, realistic about it. And it just, it looks good and then it looks bad. It looks good and then it looks bad. And it's, so it's like, I know we have to just live with this thing now, but I haven't figured out quite how to navigate planning large events, you know, long-term, because I like to plan things months in advance, just so everything is, you know, all the T's are crossed, I's are dotted. And you can't really do that because like I can plan something for April and then, you know, end of March, by the way, we got Omicron B or Omicron C or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, it's a lot of people at first were like, don't do it, you know, like, but then a year passed, they're like, well, we're just gonna live with it. Just, you know, do something, you know, like, so some people are definitely kind of like nudging me to just do it again. And I think for them, it's just, they're just sick of being separated, you know, and Nerd Night has always been about bringing people together. So, you know, the idea of doing it through Zoom is like, okay, we did two or three of those, but it's not really what Nerd Night is about. You know, it's really about people being together. And that's what it's been about for me since day one. So, you know, the idea of like being siloed through a screen is not exactly, you know, the point of it all. If we just wanted to learn cool stuff, you know, they could be at home with a textbook, you know, like they could be at home with the internet. They don't need me or Nerd Night for that. You know, the real joy of an event is being present and, you know, sharing moments with people and being together.
So would it be fair to say in this kind of new normal, to use that cliche, Nerd Night will be back, just not quite sure how?
Yeah.
When.
Yeah. I mean, it'll definitely be back. I'm still not sure how or the exact date when, but it will be back. And, you know, cause we can't, you know, I can't be on the farm forever, but I don't know. I really just don't know. It's hard to say. And I know we have something penciled in for March 14th because March 14th is Nerd Night Day, which is our anniversary. But I'm not quite sure if I want to announce something and then the next week have to cancel it, you know? So I haven't really said anything about it through our social channels or through our email blast, but yeah, it's we got something on the books, but I don't know. It's might have to put the kibosh on that, so we'll see.
And March 14th is that something to do with pie?
That's right. Yeah, it's right. Pie Day, and March 14th is Pie Day. Also, Albert Einstein's birthday. A little known fact there, and it was the first of Nerd Night Orlando event in that we had. It was at Stardust, March 14th, 2013.
In the meantime, if people want to learn more about Black history through the nerd glasses, I suppose, yeah. What channel should they be looking at?
Yeah, they can go to nerdierthings.com, which will redirect to the YouTube page. But obviously, if you go to Nerdier Things on all the social media channels, the big ones, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're present on all those. It stays pretty active. When I'm not posting educational things, there's definitely a funny meme, you know, or a picture of me wearing a Nerdier Things t-shirt, which I think is pretty cool. So,
well, Ricardo Williams, founder of Nerd Night Orlando, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Matthew, for having me. This was great.
Support for Intersection comes from Advent Health and from our listeners. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Intersection's intern is Allegra Montesano. Find archived episodes of Intersection on wmfe.org/intersection and subscribe to the podcast. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.